Blog Talk Radio.
Hi, everybody. This is Silvio Canto in Dallas, Texas, on Wednesday, August the 31st. And welcome to our commentary. Last day of August. This year is just flying by. I say that, but sometimes I don't even realize how fast it's going by. Here we are, the beginning of September. We're 2 months away from the famous midterm elections that we've been talking about for such a long time. Let me begin today by talking a little bit about the passing of Mikhail Gorbachev. Some of you may not remember him if you were around in, let's say, between 1985 and 1995, then you remember Mikhail Gorbachev because he was one of the people that you kept seeing on the front pages or in the headline news. Mikhail Gorbachev, of course, turned out to be the last leader of the Soviet Union. He took over in 1985 after a couple of men who had been placed in there. Brezhnev passed away in 1982. And then they had a couple of men who were put in there, but they died quickly. One of them, I think, died within 40 days, and the other one didn't make it to a year. So by the time 1985 rolled around, they had to look for a new leader. And Mikhail Gorbachev became the new leader of the Soviet Union. And just looking at him, you knew that he was different. He was younger. He looked different. He was more of a Western type person. I mean, his elegance, he looked like a leader, let's say, from the West, not the traditional Soviet leaders that we had been accustomed to. He also had a wife who was seen in public. That's a big difference, too. Mrs. Gorbachev became kind of a, like, she was like a Western first lady, you know, sort of like Nancy Reagan or Barbara Bush or whatever. She was with her husband all the time, something that we had not seen before in the Soviet Union. In fact, I remember the video one time, or the news segment one time, when one Soviet leader passed away, one of the two that was there between Brezhnev and Gorbachev, I think Andropov was his name, the country had never seen his wife until his funeral. So the country had never seen their first lady until she attended her husband's funeral. So that's how different the Gorbachevs were. All of a sudden, you had this couple in the Soviet Union, you know, attractive couple that looked like a couple of Western leaders. And that caught the attention of everybody. Everybody said, wow, this is different. These people are different than the ones that we had grown accustomed to. Well, Mr. Gorbachev went in and created something, Perestroika. He started a program known as Perestroika. I think that's how you pronounce it, Perestroika. And Perestroika was supposed to be a reform program. It was supposed to be a reform of the Soviet Union, because Mr. Gorbachev understood that the Soviet Union was falling apart, that the economic situation in the Soviet Union was unsustainable, and they were just falling apart. So he decided to introduce something called Perestroika that would reform the economy and not turn it into a capitalist country, but certainly make it more capitalist, make it more pragmatic than the everything run by the state as it had been before. The other thing that Mr. Gorbachev did was he came to terms with the reality that the war in Afghanistan was killing the Soviet Union, and it was. The Soviet Union had gone into Afghanistan in 1979, and for the next 5 or 6 years, Afghanistan had turned into a nightmare for the Soviet Army, and they were losing soldiers. There was a lot of discontent back home over the war. The war didn't make any sense to most Russians by the late 80s. A lot of Russians were wondering, what the heck are we doing there? So he realized that Afghanistan was a bad idea, and he started pulling the troops out, eventually pulled all the troops out of Afghanistan. I guess it was in 88 or 89. So you had Perestroika and pulling out of Afghanistan. Those were the two big items on his agenda. The problem with Perestroika is that Perestroika didn't really work because you couldn't reform the Soviet Union, and eventually the whole thing just collapsed. The first thing that happened was the Eastern European countries began to break away, like when the Berlin Wall came down in 89. And most of those countries began to break away from the Soviet Union. And then, of course, in 1991, the entire Soviet Union collapsed, and Gorbachev was no longer the leader. Mr. Yeltsin was now the leader, and it was no longer the Soviet Union. It was now Russia. And that was pretty much it. By the early 1990s, Gorbachev was over. He was still very popular in the West. He was more popular in the West than he was back home in Russia. But that was the end of Gorbachev, really, as a leader. And then for the next 25 or 30 years, he lived a, you know, he would speak at universities, travel here, travel there, but he didn't have any power. And as I understand now that he's passed away, he was not that popular in Russia at the moment, but he was very critical. I also heard this, that he was very critical of Mr. Putin and the war in Ukraine. So Mikhail Gorbachev, for people like me who remember the middle 80s, 1980s and into the 90s, I'm sure all of you remember Mr. Gorbachev tear down that wall, President Reagan in 1987 calling on Mr. Gorbachev to tear down that wall. So for many of us, this is like a name that we grew up with, we remember. I assume for most of the younger people, especially if you're under 40 or under 30, the name doesn't really mean anything to you. For those of us a little older, the name does bring back a lot of memories, you know, all those great meetings between President Reagan and Gorbachev and President Bush and Gorbachev. I mean, there was just, he was in the news all the time, and he was a consequential man. But eventually he passed away, and it'll be interesting to see how they remember him. I wonder if he's going to get a state funeral. Maybe he will, having been the former leader. But again, there's not a lot of support for Gorbachev in Russia at the moment. And I don't know if that's good or bad or fair or unfair, but that's the way it is. So Mikhail Gorbachev, dead at 91. What a personality from, that would be 35 years ago. That's when he was in the news constantly. Well, President Biden was in Pennsylvania yesterday, and he gave really a very divisive speech. And he keeps doing that. I don't know who's telling him that this is the way to do it, but he keeps doing that. He keeps making these very divisive speeches, basically dividing the country into fascists and not fascists, MAGA people and people who believe in democracy. This is not going to work, first of all, because you don't bring a country together by dividing it. So it's not going to work. I don't know if this is a tactic to gin up the Democrat side. Maybe he's hoping Democrats will turn out. It seems to me that that's what it is. It cannot be anything else. But it's not uniting the country, and it's not helping Democrats either. In fact, the Democrat senator from New Hampshire, the lady up there, was critical of what the president said. I don't know why he's doing this, but he is. I also don't know who told the White House that it's a good idea to put the president in front of people, particularly in Pennsylvania, where his approval rating is 34%. I mean, when you're at 34%, you don't exactly, you know, you're not exactly leading the pack, as they say. And the proof is that the guy who's running for the Senate, Fetterman, in Pennsylvania, had a scheduling conflict. These guys always have scheduling conflicts when President Biden comes to town. But I just think the speech was bad. It was just a bad speech. Not the kind of speech that we would expect the president to make. So I don't know who's giving him advice. I don't know who's writing these speeches. But these speeches are too partisan for a president. Presidents are not supposed, I mean, they're supposed to be politicians. Don't misunderstand. Obviously, a president is a politician. But the president is supposed to speak a little bit above the fray. He's supposed to be, you know, the president of the country. And let other people, like the vice president or other people, do the partisan speeches, but not the president. He's supposed to keep a certain style, a certain image. And this president is not doing that. And I don't think it's helping him. I don't think it's helping him at all. It's dividing the country even more than we are, if that's possible. Well, an interesting story out of Ohio. The Ohio Supreme Court decided to accept, there was a jury ruling against a university. And they went to appeal, and the Supreme Court of Ohio said, no, the jury was correct. The college was supposed to pay the money. This all comes about from an incident in a small college in Ohio called Oberlin, O-B-E-R-L-I-N. I think that's how you spell it, Oberlin, or however you spell it. But this was a problem that they had with a local bakery where a student from the college was caught stealing a bottle of wine from a local bakery. The local bakery processed the students or captured the students or the student. The student admitted that he was guilty, but then the university went into, they decided to play the race card, and they were playing the race card against the bakery, saying that it was all racist and racist and racist. The bakery, a family-owned business, decided to fight back and say, no, we're not racist. The guy was caught stealing. So it went through the courts, and they won. They won in front of a jury. The jury said, yes, the college has to pay for defamation. It went to the Ohio Supreme Court in the last couple of days, and the Ohio Supreme Court said, yes, we agree with the jury, and that's the end of the story. Now, there is a moral to the story here, and that's what I think is important, and that is that if businesses fight back against these woke companies or woke universities, they can win. They can win. And in this case, you can see that the business won. So don't, you know, just don't sit back and take it. Fight back, as this small little bakery did in Ohio. And here they are, the university or the college is going to have to write a check for $35 million. That is a lot of money. I don't care who you are. Even if you're a big university, not everybody's got $35 million sitting around to write a check to pay off a settlement like this. So I wouldn't be surprised if the university goes broke in doing so. But it's a good lesson. It's a good lesson for the university and some of the other universities who've gone very woke here over the last couple of years. It's also a good lesson for people who always want to play the race card. Not everything is about racism. Not everything is about racism. And hopefully people are beginning to learn that lesson after this incident with Oberlin University. Well, we say goodbye today by remembering Frank Robinson, great Major League Baseball player, one of my favorites, one of the guys that I grew up watching when I was a kid. And he played most of his career with the Baltimore Orioles, also with the Cincinnati Reds, who he came up with the Reds back in the late 50s. Just a great player, one of my real heroes. When I was growing up, I had a chance to meet him one time and talk to him. He was a very, very nice man. Later, he became the manager of the Orioles. He was also the manager of the Montreal Expos, who became the Washington Nationals. He was just a great man, a great player. And he was born on this day in 1935. There is a great trivia question about Frank Robinson the next time you're playing trivia. He is the only Major League Baseball player who won the MVP, most valuable player, in the American League and in the National League. He's the only one who's done it in both leagues. Some players have won it several times, but in the same league. But Frank Robinson did it in 1961 with the Cincinnati Reds, and then in 1966 with the Baltimore Orioles. So great trivia question there. Who was the only major leaguer to win the MVP in the American League and the National League? The answer is Frank Robinson, one of my all-time favorite baseball players. Again, I grew up watching him. He was one of my idols as I was growing up. Thank you for listening. Have a wonderful day, everybody. Thanks for your comments, Sally, and some of the others out there. And we'll talk to you later. This is Silvio Canto in Dallas.